everybody, and thank you for tuning into Mystic Retreat. I am Gabby.
I'm Allie. What's up, guys?
So today for our podcast, or rather, radio show.
Radio show podcast.
Radio show podcast, same difference. We, instead of playing some music, we're going to be putting on a Alan Watts talk on manifesting the reality you want, or rather kind of more about the law of attraction and like bringing in like what you desire.
Yeah.
And we're going to be overlaying one of our favorite tracks, like, cause we listen to a lot of like meditative music.
Binaural beats.
Binaural beats to get into that nice, calm, meditative state of mind.
Yeah. And so we found, like Gabby said, a talk by Alan Watts called, sorry, I have a cold, by the way, so I don't know if I am speaking very loudly, but, yeah, the talk is called, it's about manifestation. What's it called, Gabby?
It's called How Your Desires Always Become Your Reality.
Yeah, so.
We're going to do that now, but, oh, well, not now. Well, first, we're going to read.
Getting the hang of
yeah, like we did the like we did the last time. We're going to read
We're going to read, yeah, from The Promise of a New Day. It's a book of daily meditations. It's by Karen Cassie and Martha Van Kuberg. And the meditation, or rather quote, and excerpt for today is, the nature of consciousness is to flow. It seems ever-changing. States of mind succeed one another. We can direct consciousness to an idea or impulse, but we cannot lock it in place. Dr. George Weinberg. Our minds are marvelous, always moving, growing, absorbing, discarding, storing, and we are in control of the direction our minds take. Thus, it's by choice, either conscious or unconscious, that we dwell on negative outcomes rather than positive projections.
Wow. This is so relevant.
Yes. Claiming ownership of and responsibility for the direction of our minds and our lives develops a sense of individual power and, in turn, enhances self-esteem. We are what we think. We can think ourselves into becoming better selves. We are free at last from the overwhelming feelings of powerlessness, of impotence. The decision to take control of our thoughts and attitudes will be the turning point. When we contemplate the decision by offering positive direction to our minds, we'll quickly benefit from the advantageous outcomes. Today's mantra is, I will utilize my personal power today. I believe in positive outcomes. I will have hope. So, wow, this yeah. really resonates, I think, for
That's
me and
That's so
Gabby.
Completely relevant to the video that we'll be putting on today by Alan Watts.
Yeah.
Talking about the subconscious mind and, like, what we choose to manifest into our reality. And, like, a lot of that has to do with focus. I've been kind of going through that a lot myself lately and realizing that, like, you know, it's about, you know, like vibration attracts like vibration. So, like, it's not about, like, you know, if we focus on, like, oh, I don't want this to happen. It's more about the fact that you're focusing on that thing. And that kind of vibration is attracting a like vibration. But I feel like Alan Watts will sum it up way better than I. But
yeah, absolutely. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like this meditation, just excerpt for the day, really meant, like, really reflects a lot of kind of what Gabby and I have been going through recently with our project. And for our Div 3 and how our minds can really, like, work for us or against us. And
yeah.
We've been experiencing a lot of that recently.
Yeah.
So.
And how much discipline is very much a part of it.
Yeah, discipline seems to kind of be the word of the week.
Discipline is totally the word of the week.
Yeah, you know, a couple weeks ago it was boundaries. This week it's discipline.
This week it is discipline.
Yeah, so without further ado, Gabby will be reading us the tarot card of the day. What do you have for us, Gabs?
So, as you know, well, as for the second time now, you know, that I will be pulling a tarot card for our readers as guidance for the day, or rather for the week, because we only have this radio show once a week. Just as like some little guiding words, some wisdom, like the meditation, but I love tarot because it's like nice and simple. So this time, this one was very interesting. I pulled the Five of Earth. And since you can't see the cover, I'll try and paint a picture of what it looks like for the card. But it's this kind of like mischievous looking character. He's got horns coming out of his head, and he's wearing like this red cloak, and he's got like jet black hair and a very stern look, and he is crossing his arms, but in one of his hands he's got some cards that are like coming out of his hands, and then there's like a person that looks kind of ghostly, like a woman weeping in the background with like a tree, like very, very much in the background. And it looks kind of, it's kind of dismal, not a little dismal, but there's hope, you guys. It's okay. So let's see, I'm trying to get this because he looks like a trickster, and I think that's what the idea is here. Yeah, it is a trickster. So see, keywords, easy options, easy money, connivance, ooh, that's an interesting word, deception, unnecessary risk, addiction, and blame. And key phrases are avoid easy answers, think twice about taking risks, something is not as it seems, be honest with yourself, you are accountable, do you gamble with another's future, consider the feelings of others, and look beyond selfish desires and blame. Yeah, so I pulled it in reverse. So I will read, I'm going to just kind of read all of it though, because I feel like everything is relevant and you can get a lot of information out of like either the flip side or right side up. So when the Five of Earth card appears, awareness is of key importance. Something is not right. Something is not as they seem, or someone is not as they seem. Someone lies and deceives, and that someone could be you.
Right.
Yep. We lie to ourselves pretty frequently, you guys. Could it be that you're lying to yourself and those around you? It might not be a deliberate deception, but it is a deception nonetheless. The Five of Earth can also symbolize the devil inside, who encourages you to take the easy way out, to look for options that lead to instant gratification.
Wow, this is really,
really potent. Instead of putting in the hard work that yields enduring success. Is his voice in your head, or his, or, I don't know why they gender that, but is the voice in your head and heart inspiring you to, oh, his in terms of the person on the front of the card, that makes more sense, inspiring you to risk everything for the chance of a quick buck or a momentary thrill. Think twice. If you choose to take a gamble now, you risk losing it all. This trickster is the beautiful con man, whose sweet words encourage you to believe your own lies and deceptions. He caters to your weaknesses and addictions, dealing out easy lies instead of hard truths. He tells you to blame others for all that is wrong, disappointments, heartache, past failures, and missed opportunities, instead of taking responsibility for your own choices and actions. Wherever the deception lays at this time, there may be some basis for your doubts and questions. Your inner voice is telling you to look closer and see beyond selfish desires and blame so you can perceive the truth. Be honest with yourself, or your heartache and disappointment may well follow.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah.
This is a doom and gloom kind of card.
So, I pulled it upside down. So let's read that now. So, potential blockage. There is a wee devil within all of us. Who whispers that we are acting for the greater good, or not at fault where others are concerned? Does that voice encourage you to laugh aside the fears and concerns of loved ones, or to respond with defensive anger? Is it time to let your conscience guide you instead of your selfish desires? Remember your actions and choices have the power to do lasting hurt to others. Are you choosing to be blind or to turn your back on those who love you in order to cater to your own self-interest, bad habits, or addictions? Are you gambling with someone else's future happiness as well as your own? It is easy to say that those you hurt are responsible for what they choose to feel and how they react, but embracing this belief, even if it is true, still shows a marked lack of empathy and understanding. Your words and deeds have influence and consequences. Do not deceive yourself into believing that you are above reproach or accountability. When the reversed Five of Earth appears, you are being cautioned against arrogance and pride. Understanding and consideration for others is needed at this time. Wow, you guys. Wow. Excuse us while we laugh to the side. This is a heavy card.
Yeah, I'm... sorry, I'm recovering from my laughter.
Yeah, that's a heavy card to deal.
Also, shout out to our friend Dan, who's tuning in right now. Hi, Dan. What's going on?
Shout out to all of our listeners who this card may have hit very heavily, or you may have resonated with a piece of it. I know I surely have. My gosh. Wow. This is great. No, this is really, this is true honesty. This is just like, you know, a nice little splash of cold water to the face when you need it.
Right. And you know, Gabby, one of the things that I was thinking about when you were reading, this card was how this could be related to the kind of the month of Sagittarius and like coming into November.
Yeah, that's right. We should mention more astrology on this as well, because we know a little from what we've like tuned into and like other podcasts we listen to, but that's very relevant at this time.
Yeah. So I pulled up the little astrology zodiac signs for Sagittarius.
Aw, you're cute.
I know. It's adorable. So this is a fire sign.
Ooh, yeah, that's a lot of fire going on there.
A lot of fire.
A lot of forward movement.
Yeah.
Wanting to make decisions really rapidly or quickly. Like how it says in here, like instant gratification.
Yeah, exactly.
Like wanting to fulfill those desires and like get it done, you know?
Yeah, and some of the weaknesses of this sign is that there are more promises than one can deliver, and people, you know, become very impatient and will say anything no matter how undiplomatic. So, you know, something to keep in mind for this Sagittarius season.
Yeah, I feel you. Wow. Gosh, that card, that was a really good one. I feel like I needed that a lot, because I think a lot of the time we want to take the easy way out. That was something that was really highlighted to me in that card in particular, especially when things get hard, because like regardless of how intuitive you are, how tuned in you are, like that's not going to get rid of life's challenges or struggles or suffering here and there. And when things get tough, like, you know, unless you're totally disciplined, you really got yourself figured out, like even then, like we want to take those easy answers because it gives us so much relief at the time. It takes us out of that suffering. But I think this card is like really representing that need to like go through, to like, you know, really acknowledge the truth behind like our desires and why we want them and what it really is going to give us, what we'll gain from it versus like the hard way, which is through most of the time.
Yeah, and I feel like that kind of goes back to our word of discipline and like kind of being accountable for our work and in our relationships with others.
Yeah, so anyhow, we're going to play the Alan Watts YouTube video because today is advice day. It's like that speech that, like, I listen to Alan Watts videos all the time. One of my recent favorites, actually, in terms of like, you know, online spiritual personalities is a woman named Teal Swan. I've been listening to a lot of her, and maybe we'll do something about that later in one of our episodes or radio shows. But today is Alan Watts, and he He's a very wise, clever man. He's got a lot to offer. So.
Very witty.
Yeah, very witty.
Yeah, anytime I ever need some grounding in my life and just some kind of direction, Alan Watts never fails to bring me
clarity.
Oh! So, yeah, exactly. So we hope that you all enjoy How Your Desires Always Become Reality by Alan Watts.
Yes. And
see you next week, friends.
Yeah.
Always get what you want, invariably, even though you may think that it's entirely opposed to your wishes. But if it's your karma, everything that happens to you, put it in another way, everything that comes to you is a return to you of what goes out of you. Yes, obviously, that's absurd. If you confine the definition of yourself to your voluntary, conscious behavior. That's a ridiculous definition of oneself. Oneself, by any stretch of the imagination, must involve far more than the conscious and voluntary aspects of our behavior. And if we see that it involves intimately and inescapably the behavior of what we call the other, the not-self, the environment, and see that these two are moving together like the two sides of the snake when it swims, then you get a very curious feeling. You have to be careful of it. If you've got a Western background. Because this is what happens to a lot of people who play around with psychedelic chemicals. There are many, many cases of inflation among these people. That is to say, when you get this sensation that the two sides of the world, the inside and the outside, are moving together, you may think, I am ruling it. I am God in the Western sense of the word. Therefore, your ego, instead of being, as it were, integrated and transcended with all this process, merely assumes vast dimensions, has megalomania, is blown up by the mystical experience. And so you get the holier-than-thou people going around, seem to think that they're above all human conventions and have no obligations to anyone or anything because they're divine and they can do as they damn please. That what they haven't realized is that doing as you will isn't a new kind of behavior that you suddenly put on and say, from now on I'm going to go around doing as I will. You have to realize first that that's what you've always been doing. And you could look at this from a very simple point of view. It's not a complete point of view. But you can say, well now what about the people who did good and who did the things that they didn't want to do? You know, everybody's mother said to us, darling, sometimes we have to do things we don't like. What about that? Well, you can always say, the kid obeyed the mother and did the thing that he didn't like because that was the better part of wisdom. In other words, if he'd hadn't done that, something worse would have happened. And we choose the lesser of two evils. And when you find yourself in a situation where you have to choose the lesser of two evils, then you say, I want out of here. You take the easiest way. You take the line of least resistance. So that's your doing. Now, you can pursue that more profoundly when you stop thinking about human behavior as something that responds to the compulsion of an environment. And you can get out of that when you see the behavior of the environment as an essential aspect of you. So it isn't, as it were, the environment starting something, which you are therefore compelled to follow. It's the whole system moving together. So then, you get in the state of liberated or mystical consciousness, you very often feel that a hill is lifting you up as you walk up it. The ground seems to heave beneath your feet, and up you go. And you get this strange feeling of lightness, of effortlessness. Walking on air, never a care, you know. This wonderful sense that there are no obstructions anywhere. There's nothing, as it were, banging you and making you do that. It all flows together. And that's a very common sense. That's, you are actually, in that state of consciousness, you are perceiving the goings-on, the Tao, the course of nature, in the way it's happening. But in the ordinary way, you've been conditioned to resist it, to fight it, and to use those sensations of resistance to create a sensory basis for what you describe as the ego. The ego, in practice, is a sense of strain. When you are aware of I, you are aware of a basic discomfort, which is located basically between the eyes, somewhere in here, a sort of tightness. Also, it's in other centers too, it's in the solar plexus, and there are various physical centers, in other words, where this constant tension or resistance against it is going on. And that's what you feel when you talk about I. When that tension ceases, you discover immediately that the separate ego has disappeared, and that what I refers to is simply the total panorama of experience, everything that's happening. That's I. And obviously I don't know all of it, because I can't inspect all of it with my radar, with my conscious attention. That would be a ridiculous undertaking, to know everything in that sense. We know it in a much better way, as we know how to grow hair and open and close our hands. So, this point of view can be understood if we clarify the initial problems we have about it. And I suppose the first problem is, if we accept the notion that everything that happens to us is our own karma, our own doing, then we have to be very careful of, shall we say, the devil of omnipotence, of inflation, of feeling that your ego is what is in control of all this. And the second thing is, if you think then that everything that happens to everybody is what they really want to happen, then you can absolve yourself from any qualms about being unkind to someone, because you could say, well, the unkindness I did you was what you really wanted, wasn't it? You know that business about the responsibility of the person who gets murdered for getting murdered? There is a curious sense in which a lot of people go around looking for trouble. Freud pointed out quite correctly the psychology of accident-prone individuals. They seem to be attracting trouble like lights attract moths. And we're all doing that, but we manage to remain unconscious of it, so that we can praise and blame and play the game which says, that's not my fault, that's your fault. And so we go around apportioning faults to everybody. Because if we're going to apportion praise for what the good things people do, you can't make praise mean anything unless you also go around blaming. Praise and blame go together. Supposing everybody was acting in a praiseworthy way, and we praised everybody for everything, they'd get tired of it. They wouldn't even notice it anymore. So long as you're going to get a kick out of being praised, you've got to go around blaming too. It's very simple. But if you see the folly of that, that praising and blaming are just creating each other, then you don't praise and you don't blame. You just dig the whole thing. And that's why, when we encounter very great sages, you never hear them blame people, and they very rarely praise anyone. You try to start gossip in the presence of such a person, and you make a derogatory comment about someone. It's as if you had thrown a rock into a well and heard no splash. A funny feeling, because that you get no response. You get no agreement. And if you praise somebody, there's also likely nothing to be said, except perhaps some remark that, of course, you're praising the beloved in all its manifestations. And this disconcerts some people terribly. I've always noticed that real sages never gossip, never criticize persons. And because they understand so well the French saying, tout comprendre, c'est tout pardonner, to understand all is to forgive all, is so true if you are experienced in just the ordinary way of dealing with human problems. You've been a counselor or psychotherapist or minister or anything like that. You very soon get to realize how vastly complicated people are, and to see that they really are in the messes they're in, not because of anything. But that's the way it is. And you stop blaming people, and because you don't blame people, you have open ears and people come and seek your advice. They don't want to come to someone who's a counselor who will bawl them out. It's like dentists who simply accept the fact that people really don't take care of their teeth and realize that the job of a dentist is precisely to look after people who can't be bothered to take care of their teeth. That's why he's in business. So a good dentist doesn't call his patients out because they didn't do this, that, and the other. Just accept it. Same with doctors. They know perfectly well that nobody's going to live by the rules of health. And they're very vague as to what they are. And, you know, there's every kind of theory about how you ought to live, what is healthy, but they change in fashion. And you ought to eat this kind of diet in 1921. By the time it's 1930, they've changed their ideas altogether. By the time it's 1960, it's back again to a mixture between 1921 and 1894. Something like that. You see, it's always changing. So, while the rules are not so... You see, if they were all absurd, it would be easy. But they're not all absurd. There's some truth in it, always. But nobody's ever quite sure. So the function of healers and doctors and so on is just to do what can be done to stop the mess getting too messy. And they must accept it as that. That's their job. If I were healthy, I'd say to the doctor, I wouldn't need you. So you're in business. Now, what about it then? We have difficulty in seeing this mutuality of our relationship to the rest of the world because it's contrary to common sense, contrary to the way we've been brought up. And therefore we have what I would call an initial intellectual block to understanding it, quite apart from any emotional blocks or anything of that kind. But obviously, we must overcome that intellectual block if we're going to go any further and actually realize and feel this way of life's working as a relationship between what you do and what happens to you. Then the question arises, then what do I do? Do I go around saying to myself, all this that's happening to you is what I wanted? I am inside and outside. I am the subjective and I am the object. And then I mean to go around thinking thoughts about this, so as it were to talk yourself into this way of feeling. Well, that's very superficial. Because this new sense of relationship to nature is something much more than an idea. See, ecologists and physicists have the idea that this is so. But they, mostly in their private life and in their ordinary human behavior, are just like other people who don't feel it. and who feel themselves in a Newtonian billiards game, even though they've gone on to quantum mechanics. So that there may be a transition from our ordinary way of feeling how things go on to the new way, we have to do something other than think. Because actually thinking is causing the trouble. It is by thinking that we divide the world into separate events and separate things. That is calculus. And Ananda Kumaraswamy once described the life of the liberated being as a perpetual, uncalculated life in the present. And you say, wow, I don't think I could do that. That saying of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, thou be not anxious for the morrow, the uncalculated life. If God so clothe the grass of the field, will he not much more clothe you, faithless ones? And I've never met a preacher yet who would really take that up. They all say, well, of course, that's too hard a saying for most of us. It's not practical. Everybody has to take thought for tomorrow and calculate. Well, at this point, people can go in two directions. There's one class of people who will say, all right, let's live the uncalculated life. Let's not make any plans. And before you know where they are, they're living in a filthy pad and scrounging around, living on petty thievery and so on. This is the usual thing. This is, got into it the wrong way. The first thing to do is, just as I said, whether you like it or not and whether you know it or not, the relationship between you and the environment is always one that is harmonious. So in the same way, you are always living the uncalculated life. You have to find out, first of all, that you're always doing it. And that what you call your calculations, the things you did, were funny little rationalizations. In other words, your ego has about as much control over what goes on as a child sitting next to its father in a car with a plastic steering wheel that is turning the car the way daddy drives it. Because, as I pointed out, most of the functions, most of the goings-on in you, around you, the circumstances of life, have nothing to do with your ego at all. And you don't even know why you make up your mind to do certain things. We know superficially, we have a few ideas. It's like when you enter into a marriage, you have really no control over its outcome, in the ordinary sense of ego control. You've taken a colossal gamble, in which you've involved enormous complexes of patterns. And maybe it'll come out all right if you don't interfere with it too much. You don't. It's like Oppenheimer said, it's perfectly obvious that the whole world is going to hell. And the only possible way we might stop that happening is not to try to prevent it. You know, all these wars are started out by people who think that they're helping someone, that it's going to make things better. So when you begin from the basis, not of saying, I should now live the spontaneous and improvident and non-calculating style of life. But realize you've always done that. Only you rationalized that you didn't. You always did what you wanted to do. Basically. Only you said sometimes it was my duty. But you preferred a conception of yourself as someone who always does his duty. That flattered you. And so you were still following your own way. Now the first thing then is to see that. That's what's happening. So that you don't think, well now, there is some special thing I have to do to understand this harmonious relationship between the individual and the world. Because if you work on it that way, you will start from the presupposition that that relationship doesn't already exist and has to be brought into being. The thing is, it doesn't have to be brought into being. It's there. But now when you see that that's so, it obviously starts to make a difference. You do behave in a different way. But the behavior, the new kind of behavior that is a result of a transformation, is not forced behavior. When you try to imitate the way a saint behaves, you have made a forced change, and you know all forced behavior is phony. It's like someone saying, I love you, I love you, I love you, when you don't. You feel you ought to, but you don't really. And there's something, it doesn't ring true. Think of the poor Lord listening to all the prayers of all those people saying, I love you, Jesus, and he knows they don't. They're just saying this because they think they ought to. And be very trying. So whenever you do a thing like that, you see, you make a forced change. Now if the change is to happen in the same way that a seed at proper season breaks open and sends up a shoot, see? It comes from the whole force of life itself. Now when you see that without your having to do anything, see, you are living the uncalculated life, and you're only pretending you're calculating it and arranging it, then, as it were, you will have a grasp of the total situation. And it will, you can allow it to produce changes in action which are not forced. So this is why there is always a trend in every kind of spiritual doctrine which says something about grace, divine grace. There must come about something in you, a change which you can't produce. And if you try to produce it, you will be a victim of spiritual pride. But on the other hand, all teachers are universally saying, you've got to make an effort. There's some discipline, there is something you must do. Well, that's the only way to get it across to people. That you, as a separate effort maker, are a myth, are a phantasm. Because if you really try to control your mind and only think the thoughts that you think are good thoughts to think, you will find that you're going round in a circle. Krishnamurti is awfully good at pointing this out. When people ask him, how do you meditate? He says, why do you want to meditate? Why are you concentrating? Why are you saying prayers? Why do you think you should believe in God? And it always comes up because I'm just a son of a bitch. I mean, I'm out for my own good, and this seems to be the way. So he says, you see, you don't have any genuine love at all. It's all fake. And so you have to find, first of all, where the genuine love is. Now you love you, don't you? That's genuine. We won't argue about that. But then, when you start from this, I gave a talk some time ago to the Air Force, their camp, the lab where they make weapons, do all the research, and they got a bunch of us there who were ministers and philosophers, and they had the nerve to ask us what was our basis for moral behavior, personal moral behavior. I said, my basis for moral behavior is pure selfishness. And I'm talking, after all, to realistic people here, and I don't think we need to be sentimental and beat about the bush. After all, you're all warriors and fighters and so on, and you know how rough things are. So I'm going to say to you, frankly, I'm out for me. But of course, I don't do it in a tactless way. I don't go around and hit people over the head and say, give me this, give me that. I'm much more subtle. I say good manners and please and how nice you all are and so on. And finally, people feel massaged psychologically into a state where they'll give. But then I said, after that, there's some things that bother me. The first one is, if I love me, what do I want? And furthermore, who am I? Because if I'm going to be realistic about getting what I want, I've got to be pretty sure what it is that's me and what is the state of desire in me. If I am desire, see, if I am a center of desire, what's it all for? Well, I think of all the things I want. But it so turns out that none of them are me. If I say I want dinner, that doesn't mean I'm going to eat me up. If I, any pleasure I can think of is the enjoyment of something that I hadn't thought of defining as myself. Because I like my sensations. I like what happens to my body when I take a fine wine and down it. But then what's the difference between my body and the wine? If I say I like the wine, I also mean I like me and the wine together. The mixture. But then I don't eat you or a friend or a lover in the same way as I drink wine. I live in association and like this. But then I'm loving things that aren't formally supposed to be me. And as I go into it, in other words, as I investigate what I mean by me, I find that I can't put any limits on it. That I cannot experience me without you. Or without the other. They're inseparable. But you don't find this out until you investigate it. Until you really go into the question, what do I want? And that's the most important investigation anyone can make, which I'm going to into in the next session. The question of power. And all these military men, you think they think they want power. And so I said to them some very subversive and undermining things without anybody knowing it until long after I'd left.
This concludes session one of Do You Do
About It. That I said to her, you know, you scare me. Because I think you're the kind of person who will push the button in order to get rid of the other people who were going to push it first. And she told me that I had no love for my future generations, no responsibility for my children, that I was a phony Swami who believed in retreating from facts. But I maintain my position. Robert Oppenheimer, a little while before he died, said that it's perfectly obvious that the whole world is going to hell. The only possible chance that it might not is that we do not attempt to prevent it from doing so. Because you see, all the troubles going on in the world now are being supervised by people with very good intentions. Their attempts to keep things in order, to clean things up, to forbid this and prevent that possible horrendous damage. And the more we try, you see, to put everything to rights, the more we make fantastic messes. And it gets worse. And maybe that's the way it's got to be. Maybe I shouldn't say anything at all about the folly of trying to put things to right. but simply on the principle of Blake, let the fool persist in his folly so that he will become wise.
Will this be an argument against conservation?
This is an argument against all kinds of do-gooding. In other words, what I'm saying is, don't take me too seriously. I'm pitching a case for the fact that the civilization has been a mistake. That it would be much better to leave everything alone. That the wild animals are wiser than we, in that they, putting it in our crude and not very exact language, they just follow their instincts. And if a moth mistakes a flame for the signal on which it gets a mating call and flies into the flame, so what? That just keeps the moth population down. And the moth doesn't worry. You know, it doesn't go buzzing around in a state of anxiety, wondering whether this sex call is the real thing or just a flame. It doesn't think consciously about the future. At least we suppose this is so. Maybe it does, but we suppose that it doesn't. And therefore, it isn't troubled. But the species of moths goes on and on and on. And it's, so far as we know, it's been around for an incredibly long time. And maybe even longer than we have. Bees, ants, creatures of this kind. They have long since escaped from history, so far as we can see. In other words, they live a settled existence, which you might consider rather boring, because it doesn't have constant change in the way.
Hello, everybody. So that was some of the Alan Watts talk that we wanted to do for today, for today's show.
We're sorry that we couldn't get all the way through it. If you're curious about it and you want to tune in for the rest of it, the talk is called How Your Desires Always Become Reality. You can find it on YouTube.
Yeah, and it's about 45 minutes long.
Yeah, so thank you so much for tuning in this week. We can't wait to create something for you all next week, and we hope that you found this show, podcast, helpful, informational, and inspiring.
Yes, thank you for tuning in as always. Now we're going to cue our end song.
Our end theme song.
Our theme song.
We like the song. Once again, for those of you who don't know, it's Breathe.
By Alpha Mist.
Alpha Mist.
Yes. All right, Gabby and Allie out.